Hello and welcome to the 4th and Inches podcast on Thursday the 13th of September. And as week one has begun, it is the time of year when overreaction is ripe, and this podcast is no different. I am your host, Ben Rolfe, and you can find me at broff1507 on Twitter. And with me today, my regular right-hand man, Ollie Dawes.
Hello, you can find me on Twitter at Ollie Dawes or at Second City Fanatics.
We also have Mark Bullock.
Hiya, you can follow me on Twitter at UKRedskin1.
And we also have Freddie Shears, our Cleveland Browns fan, who is with us for the AFC North previews.
Yeah, hi everyone, I'm back, at FShars on Twitter.
Thank you very much, guys. First of all, we'll start off with what was the biggest news going into the week, and that is we'll start with the rookie quarterbacks. So I think the biggest news of them is RG3 getting a win against the Saints. Mark, you're a Redskins fan, as your Twitter feed tells us. How did you think the Redskins did this week? Was it just that the Saints were disorganised, or did the Redskins come out well?
I think it was a bit of both. The Redskins did come out very well. They came out with plays that people hadn't seen before. Well, they'd probably seen in college before, but we hadn't showed anything in pre-season. The Saints didn't seem to be all that prepared for that, and they struggled to adjust.
Yeah, because there was quite a few early on, a lot of fake play, like a lot of play actions going to screens, which you do see a lot in the college game.
Yeah, they designed these plays where they have the option to pass or to run it, and basically Griffin was to read the defense, particularly the screens you saw on the first drive. He had the option to read the defense and hand it off or to throw it out wide for a screen. And the Saints kept playing zone coverage against it, so they just ran the screen all day long and got picked up easy yards with easy completions. So
it seemed to me there was a clear effort in the first few plays, especially, to get Garcon in. Do you think that was a conscious effort because of his drops in Indianapolis? They wanted to get him feeling comfortable, give him a few catches early on?
There was probably something to do with that. I think it was during preseason, it was quite obvious that Garcon and Griffin were the best pairing. Griffin had the most confidence in throwing to Garcon, and they had the best timing down. So I think that probably had a lot to do with it as well. Plus, I mean, they paid him however much, $44 million, whatever it was. So they're always going to try to throw it to him and get in the ball and let him make plays.
Yeah, it's probably the right idea, really. You don't want to pay someone and then find out that, or not involve him. And then when you do involve him, find he's dropping catches. You're better to get into the game early. And then when you need the big catch, say an 88-yard touchdown reception, they're the ones. So that was a good start for him, really. But going on to the Saints now, their offense was awful.
It just looked like Jimmy Gray was the only one making plays, to be honest. Colston had a couple of drops, I think, but Breeze was rushed quite a lot as well.
Yeah, watching it sort of just in real time, watching it, not necessarily using any of the coaches' film that you get on Game Pass, you could see that only Graham was the only guy getting open, and that's quite worrying, really, when you consider that later on he might not get open and the rest of them need to be finding room. Lance Moore did later on, but is this, Mark, down to more the Redskins' defense? Was it just, did they just have a good day?
In the secondary's been a huge topic for the Redskins fans. Everyone is down on our secondary, so the Saints to struggle to complete passes on us, and apart from to Jimmy Graham, as you mentioned, I think it probably has a lot more to do with the Saints failing to put stuff together than it does with the Redskins having a good day. Saying that, though, the pressure the front seven did get was good. Breeze didn't have a lot of time to throw, but you'd expect he's used to that by now and be able to get the ball out and find open receivers, but it didn't seem to click for them.
No, the Redskins' defense was very good. Just as a little bit of a comparison here, Robert Griffin made 26 passing attempts, and they rushed 43, whereas New Orleans passed 52 times and only rushed 10. That's a hugely lopsided number. Yep. that just isn't right, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It was Redskins tried to be as balanced as possible, and the Saints, once they got behind, they went to the pass, and the passing game wasn't working for them. They didn't establish any form of a run, so the Redskins could just afford to rush guys, sit back in zone, and it paid off for him.
Something else that was very clear from that game on the Saints side of the ball is Mark Ingram. He really wasn't worth what they paid for him last year, was he, guys?
No, absolutely not. I've I've had a thought for a while now that I'm not sure if there's any running back is worth a first round pick anymore, because they're just too injury prone. They don't have a long life, despite however talented they may be. I mean, you're not going to get value from a first round pick for that.
No, you certainly wouldn't give up as much as they gave up for it.
No,
you'd consider what Tampa Bay paid for Doug Martin as a little bit less of a give up for him, considering they'd already had a pick high in the first round and they got someone they banked on.
I mean, if you're jumping above someone to get it, that's fair enough. But I mean, if you're giving up what the Saints did for a running back, I certainly wouldn't.
The leadership on the team with what sat the Saints was always a big question, and one of the great examples of it actually was late on in the game. Drew Brees showed, I thought, brilliant leadership when he threw that ball down. They were coming for the win at the end, just before he threw the final interception. He threw a ball middle of the field and he got them down there. I think they caught it at the 13-second mark and he spiked the ball with 3 seconds left. And he managed to get everyone in place. And he was already halfway down the field before the guy went to ground, which to me just showed the leadership that team needs. Do you think that was the big problem, just indiscipline and lack of leadership?
It probably played into it. They did struggle to get everything to click offensively, and they needed someone like Brees. I mean, you'd expect Brees to have them all ready all the time, but he didn't get them going until late into the second half, and by then it was too late.
No, it seemed to coincide with Lance Moore actually picking it up when all of a sudden he had a second guy to throw the ball to.
Exactly.
Just an interesting little stat about Pierre Garçon. He actually had 4 targets and caught it 4 times. I know he left at half time, but that's pretty impressive for someone who came over with the reputation of he'll just drop the ball.
Yep, that's what you expect when you pay the amount of money that you paid for him. Yeah.
If he's out next week, who for fantasy owners should we be looking out for?
Aldrick Robinson was the guy that took his place last week, and he stepped up and he played pretty damn well, so... Aldrick Robinson would be the guy. He's the next in line to play the X receiver slot, which is what Garçon plays for the Redskins. So, Aldrick Robinson.
Yeah, I think you can safely say that this week, even though the Saints were off, I think the Redskins deserved their 40-32 victory. And hopefully it's the start of a good season for them, because I think Mike Shanahan needs it, really.
Yeah, I definitely hope it's the start of a good season, you know.
Well, now I think we'll move on to a rookie that didn't have quite such a good start. In fact, he had a QBR rating, according to ESPN, of 1.2. I think you know who I'm talking about, Freddie. We'll come to you and you can tell us about Brandon Whedon.
Yeah, well, from a Browns perspective, it was just a bit of a disaster, really, wasn't it? I mean, I guess the only positive for Whedon... which you can take from it, is that it can't really get much worse. Some people will probably point to the fact that they were playing the Eagles defense and that they have a really aggressive front four and that I guess they just couldn't cope with the pressure. But, I mean, from the looks of it, the Eagles defense wasn't really sort of getting to him that much. And it was just the 4 interceptions really were sort of poor decision making. And, I mean, I suppose I could take this defeat a bit better if they'd been completely blown out. But it was also the fact that, you know, they came so close. It was just 1 point. And I don't want to harp back to it, but if Colt McCoy had been in that game, then I would say 90% sure that they would have won it.
Well, yeah, because you mentioned the interceptions there. Looking at the first interception, he was a little bit unlucky, because even though he did throw into a little bit of coverage, his receiver bobbled the ball and knocked it straight up in the air for someone to pick off. But the second interception, he just threw it up in the air, and the fourth one to end the game, he might as well have just picked out that defensive back.
That was particularly awful.
So, but like you said, his saving grace was that Michael Vick on the other side was just as horrendous, really.
Yeah, I was really shocked by that. The other thing was that Andy Reid's game plan was just completely the opposite of what I thought it should have been. I think Vic passed 56 times and then they only ran the ball about 20, which against this Browns defense, you should be doing the opposite, really.
Yeah, they had 30 rushes in total, but only 20.
Yeah, McCoy, I think, had 20.
Yeah, there were 7 of them which were Vic, and they weren't designed runs. They were just him salvaging the play. Talking of the running game, what did you make of Trent Richardson?
Oh, well, he was pretty horrendous as well. I really hope that he's still struggling a bit with that injury, because if that's him at 100%, I dare to think what he's going to be like for the rest of the season. Maybe it's just a case of that he's been out and he's still getting used to the blocking schemes, and he'll sort of grow into his role a bit as the season goes on. But yeah, that definitely was a concern. And the other thing that points me towards is the offensive line, which seemed to struggle a bit throughout the game. And that was really pinpointed as being one of the team's strengths going into this season. They've got a really nice sort of young group, which seems to be gelling together, but I think they were one of the weaknesses on Sunday.
But the only thing you have to say in the offensive line's defence, and in Richardson's defence, was that the Eagles went in thinking, oh, with Whedon passing to the mishmash of wide receivers that they appear to have there, they don't appear to have anyone that's a standout at the moment. They kind of just said, oh, the secondary can handle the receivers, and they just got keyed in on Richardson, and it was almost impossible for the defensive line to block that many bodies. And it made it so hard for Richardson to actually find a gap, because there was just almost 8 defenders and his offensive line and his tight end in his way every time. So I think it will get better, but for him to get better, I think Whedon's got to get better. Do you think that's correct?
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's the case, because otherwise you'll just have a situation like the Jaguars last year, for example, when you had Jones-Drew and he was just up against sort of 8 men in the box the whole time. But I mean, obviously, Jones-Drew was able to sort of play around that because he's been in the league so long. He's a much more established running back. Well, Richardson, you know, he's just a rookie. This is his first game, and he hasn't really had a chance to practice properly with the team because he's been out with that injury. I mean, he didn't even play in any preseason games. So I think there's that in his favour.
He has got to just get into it a little bit. It's very hard to judge him on his first ever NFL game. Would you say that he is somebody that should be sat for fantasy owners in the future until he proves himself?
Possibly. I would say maybe the first few weeks, because they're up against the Bengals next week. I presume it will be more of the same, because their defense is actually quite similar. Their front four is quite similar to that. The Eagles, they like sort of very aggressive, come off the edges and put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And so I can't really see Whedon having he's going to have a better game, obviously, than this one against the Eagles, but not that much better. So, I would sit him if I was anyone this week, yeah.
I think that is a fair thing. Looking at the ESPN box scores here, you actually only had 12 completions, but 10 different receivers were targeted. And that doesn't even include Josh Cribbs, who is arguably one of the better playmakers on that team. And do you think they just need to find somebody who they can go to when they need a completion? And who should that be, in your opinion?
Yeah, that is the problem. They don't really have anyone who's sort of an established receiver. At wide receiver, they've got a lot of young, inexperienced guys. I mean, Greg Little's the guy who's supposed to step up and be the number one man, but he's just had a terrible problem with drops. I think he had one in the game on Sunday, which was just, you know, unforgivable, really. And really, their most reliable target for receiver is Ben Watson at tight end, who had a very good season in 2010, but since then he's just been plagued by injuries and he's been really unreliable. So no, they don't really have anyone sort of at receiver who Whedon can rely on to throw to. They're all sort of, it's pretty much up in the air at that position.
Yeah, whereas the vice versa, the Philadelphia Eagles relied heavily on Macklin and Jackson, but with Celek, Avant and McCoy sort of chipping in, and then Harbour getting the game-winning catch to win 17-16. Your kicking game looked good. I suppose that's one thing you can say positive for Cleveland. And the defence was strong as well. So it's not all misery.
Yeah, the defence was good. I mean, I'm not sure that's how much that is to do with how awful Michael Vick was. But yeah, the defence was good. So that is a positive to take. Unfortunately, Joe Hayden's going to have to surf that 4-game suspension now. So that's a bit of a blow.
Yeah, but and he should arguably have had a 5th interception. But for DeSean Jackson, it was a clever but crafty bit of play, so to speak. Like, clever but a bit naughty. He pulled him back as they were going in the end zone, and Joe Hayden would have almost had a sure interception. And he didn't even get a flag for it, which was very harsh, and you're going to miss him, I think. So.
Yeah, no, we definitely. He's really the key to our entire defense in a way, much like sort of Revis is with the Jets. So, yeah, it's going to be a massive blow.
So, with the Eagles' performance, do you think that a lot of people tip them for the Super Bowl? Do you think that they're good enough to get there? Was it just a bad day at the office and that they'll settle down? Or do you think this is something we're going to have to look out for, is them really struggling?
Well, overall, you look at the team and the quality there, and you would say that they should be a surefire playoff team, but it's just the way Michael Vick's been playing. I mean, 2011 and to start this year, he's just been awful for some reason, which is so strange, because in 2010 he was an MVP candidate, and there's also that fact hanging over him that he's bound to get injured at some stage. So I'm not sure. I wouldn't bank on them just because of those question marks over Vic.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see actually if they get up in games, whether they pull Vic and stick Foles. Nick Foles, if they stick him in for a bit of experience. What do you think, Ollie? Do you think they'd give him a chance in case Vic gets injured if they get up in games?
Yeah, probably. If it's sort of a blowout, then they could give Foles a bit of a run, because like Freddie said, at some point Vic is probably going to get injured, and that's going to throw Foles into the fire, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, be another rookie quarterback starting for a team, so...
Watching the game against the Browns, though, Vic just... He seems to want to throw it as hard as he can. He can't seem to take anything off the ball. 3 to 5 yard passes, he's really hammering them at the receivers, and he was just awful the other day.
Yeah, it's saying that. Even there were some slant deep ins that he was trying to throw to Macklin, one of them in the end zone, where it looks like Macklin's made a terrible drop, but it just needed a bit of touch. It didn't need to be winged at him as hard as it could be. And yeah, Macklin just gets his hands to it, and it just goes through them almost. He just can't get there quick enough.
And I'm pretty sure the Eagles have got an option to opt out of his contract at the end of the season.
Yeah, they do. I heard that this morning.
Yeah, I've been very interested to see what direction they go in.
Anyway, we shall move on from Freddie's crushing night that Sunday proved for him, and we'll go on to a slightly more positive rookie start, even if it wasn't as good as people were maybe expecting. Andrew Luck and the Colts, they lost to the Chicago Bears 41-21, but you're not that upset about what happened, are you, Ollie?
No, of course not. I mean, the Bears have got a very, 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 very good defense. I thought Anthony Costanzo had a pretty good game. Supposedly he was up against Julius Peppers for the majority of it. I mean, looked through the ball 45 times, and we were chasing the game in the second, third quarter. As soon as Vinatieri missed the field goal and Brazil fumbled the return, I mean, we just pretty much had no chance.
The wheels came off for Indianapolis at the end there with Vinatieri missing that field goal, and then they fumbled and that allowed Michael Bush to put in, and all of a sudden it went from being a 17-14 game, and they could have been all square if he'd hit that field goal at 17-all, and it was all of a sudden 24-14 to the Bears, and it was almost over from that point, so because the Bears just came out in the third quarter and dominated.
Look, I've led them down the field pretty well, got them in field goal range, and you'd usually back Vinatieri to make that kick, and it was just pretty symptomatic of the day we were having in the end.
That was the bad side, was there was the odd fumble and a few general mistakes from the team, fumbles and stuff like that. What stood out as a good point for you?
Reggie Wayne. I mean, he was just pretty much unbelievable. Everything that came his way, he caught pretty much. There's one-handed catches, and yeah, he was just fantastic.
The one thing I did notice a little bit with you, while Reggie Wayne was very good, and the passing game in general was quite good, they caught a lot of the... There weren't a great deal of drops, I noticed, but the running game really struggled. Donald Brown had 9 attempts for 48 yards, but he was salvaged by a couple of good runs later on. And Vic Ballard, 4 carries for 6 yards. Andrew Luck hasn't got a chance if they can't run the ball, has he, really?
Well, yeah, I mean, Chuck Pagano's sort of installed this mantra of run the ball well and stop the run on defence, but I mean, the offensive line's just so bad that they can't get anything going in the run game. Donald Brown, like you say, Pagano seems to be justifying the offensive line by saying Brown got a couple of big runs, but that was just a couple of plays. For the whole game, they weren't very good.
But if you only give him 9 carries as well, that doesn't give Donald Brown a lot of chance to make the offensive line look good, really. So 2 of the more impressive runs were actually when Andrew Luck nearly got sacked, and he managed to get out of it, and I think he scrambled for a first down almost both times.
So yeah.
Your defence was impressive, though, for in the first quarter, for a defence that was so heavily sort of criticised in the off-season. But what let them down was the fact that going hand-in-hand with the run game, you couldn't keep them off the field.
Yeah, I mean, they started off quite well, of course. A couple of good special teams plays by Joe LaFedge, knocking the ball back from the end zone and pushing them back inside their own 5. But as soon as Dwight Freeney went off injured, the whole unit seemed to fall apart at the seams, really. I mean, even Powers and Vontae Davis, they weren't that good in the pass game. I know Davis only just signed, so it'll take him a bit of time to get up to speed with things. But yeah, they just couldn't get off the field.
Yeah, with your defence and their offence, you can't afford to give them 10 minutes more of possession time.
We're missing a few pieces as well, like Pat Anger at inside linebacker, and I think the one Josh Chapman, the nose tackle out of Alabama, to come back pretty quickly, and now Freeney's out, and it's just one thing after another.
So even though your defence struggled to get off the field, penalties are not something that could be blamed for that, because you only had 3 penalties for 19 yards, which, considering some of the teams who had seem to have a lot of penalties, it's not bad for a team that's learning.
Yeah, Vontae Davis gave up a pass interference in the end zone, which basically didn't really matter. They were quite disciplined, really, from that aspect. Especially since I was a bit surprised, because Pagano has been talking about building the monster, that his words, not mine, that they were going to play really physical defense, so I thought they would give up a few more penalties than they did.
It was definitely a positive learning experience, is the best way of putting it, for Indianapolis. It wasn't exactly positive at the time, but there were some very, very uplifting things that maybe weren't noticed at the time, but later were. Like, for example, Andrew Luck, after he threw one of his interceptions, it was an absolutely terrible throw on the goal line, and he went along and he was talking to everyone, saying, like, "My fault, let's get over it, we'll come back from this," sort of thing. And that's really promising to see from someone only in his first year.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's only his first game. Even the likeness has again been edged towards Peyton Manning, because his first game for the Colts was over 300 passing yards, 3 interceptions, 1 touchdown, 1 fumble, which is pretty much exactly what Luck did. So, yeah, I mean, it's only the first game. Give him a bit of a chance, because I think people are already sort of, like, there's that guy that tweeted or texted into Sky Sports saying, "Do you think they regret not taking Robert Griffin III?" I mean, it's one game. Nobody knows what either of them will end up doing in this league. So, yeah, we'll give him time.
Exactly. Like I said in the introduction, it is overreaction week. Chances are next week Robert Griffin will have a terrible game and Luck will have a great game and everyone will have changed their opinion again.
So yeah, this is the thing.
We'll move on to a controversial selection, I suppose it was at the time. Expected, but a little bit controversial. The Miami Dolphins taking Ryan Tannehill and then deciding that he was going to start. He didn't have a great game, but it wasn't, at the same time, watching it, it's not as bad as the stat line shows. They lost to the Houston Texans, which wasn't unexpected. They lost 30-10. But it was just 2 minutes at the end of the second half where they just turned the ball over continuously, and that cost them big time. Tannehill, he had 3 interceptions, but he wasn't that bad, was he, guys?
No, I don't think he was that bad. I mean, the one thing that's glaringly obvious when you watch the Dolphins' offense is that he's lacking a genuine number one safety blanket, much like the Browns are, actually. And his receivers really didn't help him out on Sunday, to be honest.
No, one of the things I've underlined here is actually the drops. There was a hell of a lot of them. But then on the other side, Devon Best is a good example. He made a lot of absolutely brilliant plays, good catches that where Tannehill just missed him by a few yards and he just reached out and grabbed the ball. And Fasano was very similar. So he's got, they've got some work to do, but they've got some promising signs there, I think. The only other thing that stood out to me, really, for Miami, it was a good note and then, again, a bad note, but Reggie Bush, he started off really well in the first half, but he died away a little bit late on. Was that just because Houston Texans were just coming after Tannehill and therefore on the way to get Tannehill they were finding Reggie Bush, or was it just that he's just not a four quarters, three down runner like they seem to try and use him for?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one because even after last season there's still those question marks about him, and you would have thought he sort of would have proved himself somewhat, but yeah, because he's so undersized for a running back to be an every down player, and it's difficult. I don't know really. I think we'll see over the next few games whether they use him in a similar role. But he's got Daniel Thomas behind him, who's obviously much more of that every down mold, and they used him a bit on Sunday. I think he had a fumble though, didn't he? I think.
Yeah, he did, and he also dropped a couple of wide open passes that would have taken it for a first down, so that's not good for them, whereas Bush, he caught all six of his targets.
And I think that's why they like to use Bush quite a lot, because he's so good in the passing game, and obviously he fits in with that sort of that ideal that Philbin wants. But obviously those question marks are still there of whether he can be an every down back, which I probably, if someone had a gun to my head and asked me whether he was or not, I'd probably say he's not.
Although looking at the box score, this is probably how they should use him every week. 14 carries for 69 yards, 6 receptions on 6 targets for 46 yards. No touchdowns, but they've not overused him in the run game, and they've got him out in the open and got him passes, and he's got a decent yard, 7.7 average. You can't really ask much more than that from him, actually, can you?
No, not really.
Especially in a team lacking so much in receiving threat, using him as an option out of the backfield, probably a good idea.
Well, when you compare that he had 14 carries for 69 yards and Arian Foster had 26 carries for 79 yards, you can't be too disappointed at all if you're a Miami fan in what you've got there at running back. Like I said, it was the last couple of minutes of the second quarter where Houston scored with 1:53 left, 43 seconds left and 7 seconds left. And that took the score from 3-all to 24-3, and the game was over, and it basically left Tannehill to come out and fend for himself in the second half. And he was trying, and that's where a lot of the interceptions came, I feel, sort of him trying to get them back in it. We will move on from Tannehill and we'll go on to talk about Russell Wilson, who wasn't so much controversial when he was drafted, but it was quite controversial when he was named the starter in front of Matt Flynn, who they paid quite a lot of money for. How did you guys feel that Russell Wilson went?
He was up and down, can't you? I think he was just sort of your average rookie. He had his up plays. I think he deserved the starting job from the way he played in preseason. I watched quite a lot in preseason, so he had his up and downs. When he was up, he was really good. He was good at keeping plays alive, scrambling around, and completing passes, keeping his eyes downfield. But at the same time, he had his plays where he looked like a rookie, where he missed reads and he took sacks and took hits when perhaps he should have got the ball out quicker. So he had his ups and downs, just like every rookie does.
Yeah, and they lost to the Cardinals 2016. In a way, they were unlucky to lose because they had a couple of catches dropped in the end zone that would have won it for them at the last minute. But also they had a couple of, say, dubious penalties that kept the drive alive, and they wouldn't even have been in it if it hadn't been for Leon Washington's returning ability, which was just superb. He didn't really feature in the run game, but he had two absolutely storming returns that set them up to get in the end zone or to get a field goal and stay in the game. As for Arizona, they started John Skelton, but turned to Kevin Cole when Skelton got injured, and Cole went 6-for-8 for 66 yards and a touchdown. Do you think, even if Skelton's fit next week, they may stick with Cole?
I personally wouldn't, but I'm not a fan of Cole whatsoever. Possibly because I have slight Redskins bias against a former Eagle, but I'm still not a huge fan of him. And I think you go with the guy that won the job in preseason, not a guy that got a decent half when a team wasn't prepared for him.
Yeah, that's true. The team had been focusing on what Skelton had, and Cobb came in and just pulled them apart, and they're a totally different set of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
The rushing game for Arizona was very bits and pieces. Andre Roberts had a carry, Beanie Wells had 7, Ryan Williams had 8, Stephen Howlings had 2, Skelton had 1 and Cobb had 1, which I would imagine were more scrambles than designed runs. But if you're splitting your 20 carries a game between, well, 3 running backs, a wide receiver, and 2 of them being scrambles, you're not really allowing anyone to settle into the job, are you?
No, but I mean, at the same time, it's the old running back by committee. That seems to be the trend of the NFL now. You don't see very many true feature backs that play every down and run the ball 25, 30 times a game. Usually you see 2 or 3 guys come in and take different handoffs and trying to keep the defense off guard. And, the breakdown you just gave there, it does seem a little bit too much variation, but at the same time, variation is good to keep a defense off guard.
Yeah, the real variation in the play would have been Andre Roberts. I'd imagine that was reversed and that went 15 yards. But other than that, Wells averaged 2 yards. Williams averaged 1.1 yard. He also had a fumble. And Howling only had 2 carries, averaged 2 yards, and he actually was the only person that punched into the end zone with the running game. So, yeah, it was an inconspicuous start by both teams, I'd say. And for Seattle, who, again, many teams had predicted to maybe upset the 49ers, the way the 49ers played against Green Bay, probably not what they wanted to show. Right, we'll move on to our no-huddle section, and we'll look at all the games from the weekend, starting with the Giants and the Cowboys from Wednesday night. Mark, you're an NFC East fan. What did you make of the game? Any real standouts for you from that game?
In the first half, I was delighted because I didn't think either team looked all that good. The receivers for the Giants were not helping. Victor Cruz definitely just had a horrible game throughout, dropping passes, and Manning just couldn't rely on anyone, certainly in that first half. In the second half, the Cowboys started to get a little bit of rhythm on offense. Tony Romo, I think he's really underappreciated in Dallas and in the league, Romo. And he came alive and he got his team together. But judging by certainly the first half performance, as a Redskins fan, I was delighted with it.
It wasn't a very good first half, but Dallas did step it up in the second half. And we shouldn't be surprised by Kevin Ogletree, should we, really? It was on the cards that somebody was likely to take over from Laurent Robinson's role. I know he probably exceeded expectations with 2 touchdowns and 114 yards. Robinson showed us that a third receiver could prosper in this, and against that giant secondary, it's not really a shock, is it?
No, not at all. That's one of the biggest weaknesses of the Giants, is being able to cover guys. They've tried to get past it because their front four can get consistent pressure and they can drop the rest into coverage, but there's only so much zone you can cover, and they couldn't cover Ogletree all the time.
As you can imagine, there was a lot of Dallas fans very worried with 2:36 to go when the New York Giants scored, and they thought, oh no, we're not going to throw away another 14-point lead, are we, after last year? So Dallas did manage to hang on 24-17. But that brings us to our next game, which was New England. And from this game, they played the Tennessee Titans, and they beat them 34-13. Which is a little bit more of a comfortable scoreline than I think New England fans felt watching the game at times. The real standout for New England, I'd say, Stephen Ridley, who he rushed for 125 yards, which in a New England offense is a lot of carries, isn't it? When he got 21 carries for 125 yards.
Yeah, I mean, since Jarvis Green-Ellis has gone to Cincinnati, I think Ridley's been pretty much a banker to be the main running back there. It is a bit like the Packers offense, where running back isn't really the main facet of the unit, but I thought Ridley really made himself known at weekend.
It was an unusually balanced offense for New England, actually, with 31 passing attempts to 35 rushing, but I feel like maybe 5-10 rushing attempts came when the game was out of sight and Brady just wasn't really interested in throwing the ball anymore, or probably more precisely was trying not to get sacked, because that offensive line still looks a little bit shaky. On the Tennessee side of the ball, Jake Locker looked promising, but he unfortunately had to leave the game making a tackle on a play which ended up not actually mattering, because it was a fumble that was then ruled an incomplete pass. The most disappointing thing for Tennessee has got to be Chris Johnson. I don't know if you saw this, Ollie, but he had 11 carries for 4 yards. And he had 6 receptions for 47 yards, which is a little bit better, but it's a bit worrying when he's only got having 4 yards on 11 carries, isn't it?
Particularly if you're like me and you've drafted him in fantasy football. So.
Well, we had a Stu Warbridge on here last week who paid $80 in a $200 auction for Chris Johnson. I bet you he's hoping that was just the New England defense looking very good. For New England, the passes were spread out quite evenly, which was a big thing going into the preseason about who'd see the ball, especially in fantasy football, with the biggest loser on that really being Wes Welker. He only had 5 targets, caught 3 of them for 14 yards, and seemed to lose a lot of snaps to Julian Edelman, who a lot of people have said has been being groomed to be his replacement for a while. But did anyone really see it coming this early?
Well, with the contract situation where they didn't want to give him a new contract, it was the franchise tag he got, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they just didn't want to give Welker the new contract. They didn't want to give him the money. They remembered what he was before they had him, where he was doing nothing. And they've got Tom Brady at quarterback. You can put anyone out at receiver that can catch a ball and can run around. There's plenty of people that can catch a ball and run around in this league. And when you got Tom Brady at quarterback, he's going to find him. So I think the Patriots have just said, Welker, we like you, we'll keep you, but if you're wanting a lot of money, we're not going to pay you because we can find someone else to do your job and catch everything from Tom Brady. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not hugely surprised that Welker is seeing his role taken down a notch.
No, I'm not surprised either, and it did allow for Brandon Lloyd to show us what he had, which as a New England fan is very promising, although he did miss a wide open touchdown pass when he turned around too early and ended up having to try and backflip to catch it. So we will move on to the Falcons at the Chiefs. This was a bit of a no contest really, with Atlanta winning 40-24 and getting up quite early and staying up really. They got up 10-3 for the Chiefs to come back, but it always seemed like the Falcons had this under control. And in the third quarter, they took it to 34-17, and it never really looked like the Chiefs were going to come back after that. Ollie, Matt Ryan was very impressive, wasn't he?
Yeah, very much so. They've got a new offensive coordinator who's going to bring in a bit of a pass-happy offense, and I think that suits Matt Ryan perfectly. And as a result, Julio Jones was exceptional at weekend.
Yeah, he had 6 receptions for 108 yards with 2 touchdowns on 9 targets. But, Freddie, is that going to be the way it is every week? Should fantasy owners be trying to buy on Julio Jones, or do you think they'll spread them deep touchdown passes out a bit more? Because Roddy White, he had 87 yards on 6 receptions, but he wasn't the headline, it was Jones. Is Jones going to be the man this year?
Well, even if they do spread the ball around a bit more, I certainly would invest in Jones. I think he's phenomenal. He's a complete physical freak. He's a great all-round receiver. He's perfect for that offense, really, because they don't tend to dump it off on these short passes that much. They like to go long quite a lot, which is what Jones thrives at. He's great getting downfield. He's also fantastic in the run game as well, blocking. So that's another fact to consider. He's hardly out of the game. He's always taking snaps. I think he would be a fantastic investment. The one thing to take away from this game, of course, was the fact that the Chiefs were missing 2 key parts of their defense, with Tamba Ali had a 1-game suspension and Brandon Flowers was out injured. So I don't know how much of this was really a true reflection of the Chiefs' defense. I do expect them to be a bit better as the season goes on. And I think I've got them pegged as to get that last wild card spot. So I'm not too concerned about their performance, really.
No, I did have them pegged as division winners, but having seen the way Peyton Manning looked, if he stays healthy, I can't see anyone getting in his way in that division. Looking at, more specifically at the Chiefs, Jamaal Charles, he had 87 yards and 16 carries, whereas Peyton Hillis, who many people thought was going to vulture a lot of his carries, only got 16 yards on 7 carries. Is Peyton Hillis done after what happened last year? Is he just, was it just a one-year wonder?
Well, I certainly think it was. I mean, he was horrendous for us last year. It's just the thing is, he just runs way too hard. And in that 2010 season, I think he completely wore himself out. He was already injury prone before he came to the Browns. And yeah, it's just his running style. It's just wreaked havoc on his body.
Yeah, that was particularly bruising the way he ran in 2010. On the receiving side of the ball for Kansas City, Dexter McCluster had 6 receptions. Now, Dexter McCluster, the only catch I remember him taking last year was a Hail Mary by, I think, Orton, or against the Chicago Bears. And basically, I like batted it down, it fell into his arms. But that suggests, the 6 receptions, that he's possibly going to be a big part of the offense this year. Do you think that's right, Ollie?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, Dwayne Bowe was there, Jonathan Baldwin, second year player out of Pittsburgh, I think. I think they actually do expect big things out of him, but McCluster got some receptions at weekend, probably going to work from the slot, I assume.
Yeah, he had 10 targets in comparison to Baldwin, who had none, which... it's got to be worrying, because a lot of people did draft Baldwin relatively high for where you probably could have got him if you'd waited. Is Dexter McCluster a must-add this week?
Well, yeah, probably. And does he still do returns for the Chiefs? Because I think if you're in a league where you'll get points for returns and etc., then McCluster could have even more value.
No, this year, Arenas and Copper did the returning duties, with Arenas taking 5 of the returns and Copper taking 1. But that might just be that they're trying to protect him a little bit. I don't actually know him in a lot of leagues if he's wide receiver eligible. But even at running back, with how unsure the running back setup is, he could be a valuable guy to have at running back if he's getting 10 targets a game and 80-odd yards. That's better than a lot of running backs did this week.
Yeah, I think on NFL.com he's down as a running back. I'm sure I've seen that somewhere.
Yeah, I know they said on ESPN, on a video on there, that they were going to have to correct where he was. So hopefully, if he's not there already, he'll be wide receiver eligible in the league soon. And especially in deep leagues, he's worth a flyer.
Definitely.
Right, we'll go on to the, I'd call it the most surprising game of the day in terms of who the two quarterbacks were and how it ended up. It was the Vikings who just pipped the Jaguars 26-23 in overtime. And Christian Ponder, he started badly, but he got it together. And, well, Blaine Gabbert, the pass he threw at the end was just superb. He led the Jaguars back, and he thought he'd won it for them, only for Blair Walsh to get it with a field goal and then for them to lose in overtime. How do you think Gabbert played, Ollie?
Gabbert looked pretty good, like he did in pre-season. I mean, it was always going to be hard for him last year because they caught David Garrard just before the start of the season. Sort of threw Gabbert in, I think. And with the lockout, there wasn't much time for playbook stuff. So I think it's fair to give, you know, to let him have another year before sort of writing him off, which I think a lot of people have already done.
Yeah, we were talking about the balance earlier of other teams, and Grant pointed out that Malarkey is head coach. He very much brought Matt Ryan through with a balanced offense, and Gabbert threw 39 times, compared to Jacksonville rushing it 34 times. That's a much better balance for him, because it allows him to hand the ball off to Jones-Drew, but it also puts some pressure on his back to make the plays, which I think he'll relish under. As for Jones-Drew, he actually had 19 carries, compared to Rashad Jennings, who only had 8, although I think Jennings got injured. Is Jennings just now a backup, Freddie, for fantasy owners? Not someone they can rely on anymore now that Jones-Drew seems to have stamped his authority straight back on the team?
Yeah, I think so. I'd agree with that. I mean, I had him in a few of my teams this week, and I started him, so I was obviously a bit disappointed. But yeah, he's nothing more than a backup at this stage. I think I would presume that James Drew starts next week, and from here on gets the majority of the carries. So last season, Jennings was out with an injury, wasn't he? I think the whole year. So he's still going to be rusty a little bit. And even I think 2010, when they had him as the primary backup, he didn't really get many carries. So now, unless James Drew goes out with an injury, I can't see him really doing much.
No, and if Jennings is also injured, that could really, really put him down as a backup even further. Another thing that helped Gabbert was that his receiving core actually looks like a group of people that can catch this year, with Cecil Shorts leading it, which will shock many people. But Laurent Robinson and Justin Blackman, who they went out and got in free agency and draft respectively, they put up good days with 8 combined receptions on 15 combined targets. And Mercedes Lewis, 5 receptions on 5 targets and the touchdown. Is Mercedes Lewis now a fantasy eligible tight end after slipping into a bit of irrelevancy last year, Ollie?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he had a bit of a poor year last year, didn't he? Like you say, Robinson and Blackman will probably take a bit of the coverage away from Lewis, so I think he's might be a good starter as a flex in the next few weeks.
On the other side of the ball, the receiving was Percy Harvin. Actually, you wouldn't call it a headline game because not much was said about him, but I think that was just because everyone was so focused on Lewis and Blackman. But he had 84 yards receiving and then another 20 rushing. He was a real good pickup for people in drafts because you could have got him quite late, couldn't you, Ollie?
I mean, especially after he said that he was unhappy, I think that for some reason put people off. He's just a playmaker. If you get the ball in his hands, he'll do something for you. So, yeah, I think it was a good pickup for anyone that got hold of him because Jerome Simpson's suspended, so at the moment he's probably the only receiver. I mean, Kyle Rudolph, I think, will have a good year from tight end. But, yeah, Harvin's the main weapon on that passing side of the offense.
Yeah, the other receivers were Jenkins and Aromi Shadu, who both caught 3 passes each for a combined 100 yards. But I haven't mentioned the biggest shock of the shock game, Adrian Peterson. Now, people were scared to draft him even in the 3rd round in some cases. I know I was one of them because it was not even conceivable that he'd come back from that injury, but he had 17 carries for 84 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's just stunning for someone who 9 months ago was on an operating table, isn't it?
He's a superhuman. I mean, I don't understand how he could have come back so late in the day to bring that performance. I mean, to anyone that's picked him up in sort of round 3 or 4 of fantasy, it's now very, very, very happy, I'd assume.
Yeah, and on the vice versa, anyone who picked up Toby Gerhart will be less pleased, so to speak. Talking of superhumans, we'll move on to the Jets and the great Tim Tebow, who really didn't function as much as the Jets were hoping in their 48-28 win over the Buffalo Bills, although I don't think they really needed to use him that much. He had 5 rushes for 11 yards, and he lined up at tight end at one point, and he even was on the hands team, which is a bit worrying when your quarterback is one of the best, is one of the guys with the best hands on the team. But people who drafted Mark Sanchez will be very pleased. He showed real promise. He had an early interception, but came back with 3 touchdowns. And by the end of the second quarter, they were up 27-7. And there was really no way back for the Bills from then, who vice versa, just seemed to keep throwing interceptions. Fitzpatrick threw 3 interceptions and he looked fairly terrible. They weren't helped by the loss of Fred Jackson, but CJ Spiller was a promising sign, wasn't he, Ollie?
Yeah, especially for anyone who has him in fantasy. I mean, I think people expected him to contribute more given that Jackson got injured last year and Spiller turned up and performed pretty well. And I think now Jackson's injured again. Spiller, I mean, if he's available in any leagues, pick him up now. Because he can even be used as trade value, I guess, because he's got that job now for, I think it's a month that Fred Jackson's out for.
Yeah, it's about that. The quote was, we're not expecting him back within 3 weeks, but we're not expecting him to be out for 8. Make what you want of that.
Very, very vague.
So, yeah. The other big play threat for the Buffalo Bills, obviously he was always going to struggle a little bit this week with Stevie Johnson, with Darrell Revis covering him. He had 4 receptions for 55 yards and a touchdown, and that never helps when your main receiver is shut down by the best cornerback in the league. But the Bills have also received some bad news with one of their main wide receivers going on the IR, haven't they, Ollie?
That could mean that TJ Graham has to take more of a role in the offense, who he drafted this year.
Yeah, and the other person that might benefit from that is Chandler, the tight end, who saw 4 receptions on 6 targets. On the vice versa, the Jets had Stephen Hill, who had 5 receptions and 2 of them for touchdowns. Santonio Holmes had 68 yards. They had a pretty good day. Sanchez really, really did control that offense well, and they'll be hoping he can carry that on next week. They've got a big game against the Steelers. Lions and the Rams. This was a game that Lions fans will not have wanted to be as close as it was, and I think you could probably say the same about Rams fans, who had their hearts rather broken at the end there by Matthew Stafford remembering how to play. He had 3 interceptions early on and then threw a touchdown to Kevin Smith late, but if you're a Detroit fan, you're not very happy about this, are you, Mark?
I certainly wouldn't be. I mean, throwing Matthew Stafford and Calvin Johnson and the whole Lions offense, everyone expects to be completely high-powered as they were last year, and to come out and throw 3 interceptions in the first game, you're definitely not going to be happy about it. You know, I mean, what happened to the game plan of throwing to Calvin Johnson when you need to? So, I definitely wouldn't be happy with it if I was a Lions fan.
Yeah, the positive thing for Lions fans, though, will be that they didn't settle for a field goal at the end and take it to overtime. They were desperate to get that touchdown, and they got it in the form of Kevin Smith, who, for an injury-prone guy, managed to survive the game and had a pretty good one. You mentioned Calvin Johnson. Anyone that was watching Red Zone saw pretty much all of Calvin Johnson's receptions, as I think 3 out of the 6 came on that final drive when they desperately needed it. So he stepped up when they needed him to.
Yep, he did suffer a bit of an injury there, though, didn't he?
Yeah, he is doubtful for this week.
So that's a little bit worrying, certainly from my fantasy standpoint, because I have him. So.
And many people have invested high draft picks in him.
Yeah, exactly. I think I used the first round pick on him. So, I'm a little bit worried there. Hopefully he'll be all right. I expect him to be honest.
The magic curse all over again.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, that was always going to be said, wasn't it? I bet he's not very happy about that himself, because I bet that's all anyone's saying to him as well. Matt Stafford, he threw the ball 48 times. On the other side, Sam Bradford only threw it 25 times, with the team running it 26 times. St. Louis looked pretty good. And do you think this is Jeff Fisher's influence that's going to be good for them this year?
Yeah, Fisher is a long-time head coach. When we were at the Titans, he knows exactly what he needs to do. He knows that the balanced offense will set up play action and things like that. I think it's a lot to do with Jeff Fisher's influence. Yeah.
Very much so. He looked very calm on the sidelines when everything seemed to be going a bit sort of, I'd say a bit starting, team people starting to flap a little bit on the field, and when they were marching down to take the lead, and he just looked very calm, and I think Bradford took a lot from that. So on the receiving front for St. Louis, I'd say the main receiver for them really is Danny Amendola this year, and I think the rest of the receptions are going to be spread around a bit, with even Steven Jackson being the third highest. So I think if you're going to own any St. Louis Rams receivers, you want to be owning Danny Amendola this year. Now we will move on to the 49ers. They managed to pull off a fantastic win against the Green Bay Packers. And did anyone see this coming?
I thought maybe perhaps it would be quite a close game, but I certainly didn't see the 49ers going into Green Bay and coming out with a win. I mean, last year looks like it was no fluke. They were fantastic.
Yeah, and the other promising sign for them really was that if it hadn't been for Randall Cobb's return, which should have feasibly been called back for a block in the back, they would have absolutely dominated this game. And I think it's more the fact that Green Bay don't have a rushing game that cost them in this. They lost 30-22 and they were in it until right near the end. But you can't get through games without rushing at all, can you? We've seen that this week. The teams that didn't rush have tended to lose.
No, and Cedric Benson was pretty awful on Sunday. Some people will say that was because of the 49ers run defense, but really I think he's just completely done.
Yeah, on the vice versa, that Frank Gore, who everyone said was done, had 16 carries for 112 yards, including the touchdown run that really put the game away for San Fran. Just when Randall Cobb had returned that and it was all looking a bit worrying for them, he got that touchdown run. So they'll be very pleased about that. Alex Smith. I pose this question in the preseason to our Black reviewers. Can he be the quarterback that he needs to be to lead them to the Super Bowl?
I don't see why not. I mean, he is who we thought he was. He's a pretty above average quarterback who's, as long as he's not throwing too much, is perfectly passable. And with their defense, as good as it is, I don't see why not.
No, and if the defense is strong enough to keep them in games, and if he makes the interception, stop them from suffering for it, then he probably will be able to, and especially with Michael Crabtree and Randy Moss looking promising, Crabtree having 7 receptions and Moss 4, that's before you even factor in Vernon Davis, who at times will be unstoppable, a bit like the Gronkowski syndrome in New England. Green Bay, their receivers, well, I think the shock was that Randall Cobb had 9 receptions and Jones had 4, whereas Nelson and Jennings only combined for 10 between them. Does this make San Francisco favourites to win the NFC, would you say, at the moment? With the weekend that the Saints and the Packers have had?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think I predicted them to be in the NFC Championship game against the Falcons and winning it.
So yeah, I've predicted them to make it to the Super Bowl, and I feel a bit more confident than I felt after hearing Kieran and Grant last week pull them to pieces. So they look the sort of team that could go and do it, because they've got the run and the pass game now. But I think Alex Smith is going to have to keep proving it. So we will move on to the NFC clash between the Buccaneers and the Panthers that had a surprising result, would you say, Ollie?
Well, in the UK Interblog predictions on the pulling linemen, I had the Buccaneers to win this one. From watching the condensed game on Game Pass, it looked like the Buccaneers' defence was just fantastic.
Yeah, very much. It was a ball control game by Tampa Bay, and it allowed their offense to absolutely dominate. So Josh Freeman only threw the ball 24 times, whereas Cam Newton threw it 33. And Doug Martin actually ran the ball as many times on his own as Freeman threw it. I think Tampa Bay got it just right this week. And Mark, do you think they can continue to get it right and really, really cause some upsets in the NFC South?
It's an interesting question. It's one, a mate of mine's a Bucks fan, and it's one I've been going back and forth with him on. They definitely made some good acquisitions in the off season with the likes of Vincent Jackson and Carl Nix. They were quite big spenders. The problem I've always had with that is that the Bucks were a really bad team last year, and they've spent a lot of money. And being a Redskins fan, I know bad teams spending a lot of money generally don't get a return for that amount of money. So I'm on the fence with it. I'm still sceptical, thinking that the likes of Vincent Jackson and Nix are there to collect a paycheck and sit on the beach in Tampa rather than to play football. But I mean, last week they showed that they came out strong and they managed to upset and get an upset. So maybe I was wrong to be sceptical about it, but I'm still not sold just yet.
Yeah, well, if they can keep teams on off the field for 40 minutes and have the ball for that long, I think that always gives them a chance to be more successful.
Absolutely.
The most shocking part of what happened to Carolina, really, in this loss that they suffered. It was only 16-10, so it wasn't crushing, but Cam Newton didn't look good, and even worse, the running game, which they seem to have spent all their money on, looked absolutely terrible.
Yeah, the offensive line never seemed to get any sort of blocking going. The McCoy, the former third overall pick for the Bucks, he was blowing up the offensive line the whole time, and he got through the center, he got through A gaps, B gaps to the center and the guards, and he was pretty much unblockable the whole game. And when you get a defensive tackle breaking through the line almost every play, it seemed like it's going to be hard to run. You've got to completely change up your tactics, and the Panthers failed to adjust.
Yeah, the Panthers basically gave up on the run very early, it seemed, and just threw the ball to Steve Smith, really. He had 7 receptions on 11 targets, but it definitely was a game of two different theories. I'd say Carolina came out to throw the ball all over the place, and the Bucks came out to run the ball down their throat. And for once in the NFL, the run game actually came out on top. So,
yeah, it goes to show that the run game is still important in the NFL, and even though it's becoming a more passing league, the run game is still something that teams need to appreciate and still not just disregard.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll leave it at that, and we'll move on to the Steelers and the Broncos. Now, there was a lot of questions about whether Peyton Manning would be able to do it this year, and he did actually lead the Broncos to a 31-19 victory at Denver. What did you guys make of Peyton Manning? Did he look like the old Manning, or is there still more improvement needed?
Well, I don't think he quite looked like 2009 Peyton Manning or years before that, but I mean, he certainly looked like a top level quarterback again. I mean, he had 19 completions from 26 attempts through 253 yards for 2 TDs and no interceptions. I mean, what more can you really want from him? I don't expect them to have him completely abuse his arm like he did in Indianapolis. I say abuse is probably the wrong word. They didn't abuse it. They rode it, so to speak. But I certainly think they can be a very good team this year, because they've got a good run game with Willis McGahee, as long as they don't overuse him. They've got a phenomenal defense, and I'm sure Manning will just continue on like this. And I certainly think they're capable of winning the division.
Yeah, they. Well, you said about abusing the arm. The positive thing is for Denver is it was 26 attempts at passing and 27 rushing, which with a quarterback who suffered an injury like that, that's exactly what they needed to do with him on his first game back. So I think that's perfect. Denver's receptions were very spread out between Thomas, Decker, Tammy, and then Stokely getting involved as well. But they looked a very well-drilled unit, Denver, whereas Pittsburgh, at times they just seemed to look a bit of a mess. They had 40 passing attempts, and it was sort of spread everywhere. Brown, Sanders, Miller, Wallace, they all had 3 each, but Roethlisberger he doesn't seem to have a clear favourite, and is that going to hold them back, guys?
I don't know. I mean, originally people were saying it would be an advantage, wouldn't they, with Antonio Brown becoming the number one and then Sanders perhaps having a break for a year, but I'm not sure. It's the thing with Big Ben is that he likes to try and sort of make the play himself, doesn't he? He moves about in the pocket and he sort of creates the plays. But I don't know whether that's becoming a bit of a hindrance to this offense now. I mean, obviously they brought in Todd Haley in the offseason to run things, and you would have expected him to tighten things up a bit and perhaps get Big Ben more focused on passing downfield. But from this game, it really didn't look like they've sort of done that.
Yeah, he seems to come across as a very hard taskmaster, and he's not really stamped his authority yet, you feel. So I think Pittsburgh need to find a rusher. They had Jonathan Dwyer, who had 43 yards, and Redmond with 20. And unless Mendenhall gets back, which one of them do you see being the main guy?
The amazing thing is that apparently Mendenhall's back to full practice this week. So perhaps he can have a Adrian Peterson-like resurrection. But yeah, you're right. Apart from outside him, there really isn't anyone who stands out. They're all sort of distinctly average running backs, and not Dwyer nor Redmond. I can't see either of them really establishing themselves.
No, I think if Mendenhall's now going to be taking carries off them as well, I think that Pittsburgh running back situation is just a mess that you don't want anything of if you're a fantasy owner. The other big issue for Pittsburgh was their defense didn't look that good, and Manning had it worked out. And I know Manning he's a stunning quarterback, and if anyone's going to work you out, you're not too upset if it's Peyton Manning. But Troy Polamalu, he really misses Ryan Clark when he's not there, doesn't he, Ollie?
Yeah, it was quite a big miss for them at weekend. I mean, they had another couple of players missing on defense as well, so it wasn't a huge surprise to see Manning sort of picking them off a bit.
Yeah, so I think the Pittsburgh Steelers will be pleased to get Ryan Clark back this week, and hopefully they can move on and get a win for them, because otherwise they're going to have some worries if they go 0-2 for sure. Well, that ended our initial fantasy football fix on a Sunday night, the Broncos Steelers, and we had to wait almost a whole 24 hours for the Bengals Ravens the next night. And wow, it was worth waiting for to see. I think it was Joe Flacco, but it didn't look like Joe Flacco. It was rather good, and he led Baltimore to a 44-13 win over the Bengals, which I didn't see coming, and he started it off with about a 50-yard pass to Torrey Smith, and at that point, everyone just sort of went, wow, this could be worth watching. Did any of you see that coming from Flacco?
Well, he's been working with Jim Caldwell all summer, who is sort of accredited with a lot of the development of Peyton Manning, so I don't think it's a huge surprise to see Flacco being a little bit better, to be honest.
No, and I think it's good that he's improved, because they needed him to. He was one of the big reasons why they didn't just walk into that, into the Super Bowl last year. Although he did play well in the AFC Championship game last year, he had a real chance to close New England out in that. And the strange thing about him being so good like that is that Ray Rice only got 10 carries. I know he made the most of it with 68 yards and 2 touchdowns, but is Ray Rice going to be happy with only 10 carries a game?
I mean, should it matter if they're winning so comfortably? I mean, they've got a real chance this year, I think. They weren't that far away from beating the Patriots last year. And if it comes down to that again in the AFC Championship, I think the Ravens could do it.
Yeah, actually, and when you consider that he's just been paid this year, I don't think he'll be too upset.
Yeah.
So
it's not like there's going to be anyone really eating into his carries. They've got, is it Bird Pierce they got in the draft?
He had 4 carries, and Allen had 4 carries. And other than that, it was Torrey Smith, Tyrod Taylor, who's their backup quarterback, and Anquan Boldin, who did the running, and they had sort of 1 carry each. So it's all Rice when they run it.
Yeah, the Bengals are getting caught out quite a lot by the end-around plays with Torrey Smith, because they were so fixated on trying to stop Rice that they bought the fakes, and Smith had run all the way around to the other end of the field, picking up first down.
Yeah. On the other side of the ball, on the rushing side, Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, now, he looked like the running back he threatened to be in New England, didn't he? He didn't fumble, which is a record he's still got, and he rushed for 91 yards and a touchdown on 18 attempts. Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis was a great pickup for fantasy owners this year, don't you think, Ollie?
Yeah, it looked like he was a bit more dynamic than he was in New England, but he was obviously still fighting for the extra yards. I think he's a solid option in fantasy, because, again, I don't see anyone eating into his carries that much.
No, I don't think there's much there, unless Scott comes back and shows some real flair. But Cincinnati had some positives in the passing game, even though it wasn't a great day, because Hawkins had 8 receptions and he looked really good. AJ Green, he dropped a couple, but he had 5 receptions, and Jermaine Gresham didn't really get into the game, but I think more than anything, Dalton was trying not to get destroyed by the great rushing off defense that was Baltimore with Ray Lewis leading it with 14 tackles, 11 of them solo tackles, and he also had a sack. That's pretty impressive, isn't it, Mark?
I mean, yeah, to still be going at Ray Lewis's age and still be putting up that kind of performance, I mean, just shows you just how good he is. And it's just incredible. I mean, the Redskins, as being a Redskins fan again, bringing that up, they have London Fletcher, and it's always great to see an old guy like Fletcher and Lewis be sort of almost defensive coordinators of themselves out on the field. And it's great to have a guy that's as knowledgeable as Lewis still being as physically able to make huge plays that he's doing. So, yeah, it's incredible to see him still going and doing that, putting in that kind of performance.
Yeah, definitely. And he accredited a lot to his off-season training, which, by all accounts, included biking about 40 miles around Florida every day, which is an insane amount of biking for someone who, at the time, weighed 260 pounds.
And in Florida as well, where yeah. It is ridiculous heat.
Very, very much so. He's clearly dedicated beyond what some of these rookies are, and that shows a lot. There was one more game on Monday night for anyone that could stay up until 25 past three, which is when it started and finished. Must have been nearing half six by that point. I don't know. I couldn't make it that far. I've seen it since, but that was a stretch too far for me, the half six in the morning stay up. The Oakland Raiders lost to the San Diego Chargers at home. But the biggest story out of this game is actually that the long snapper cost them the game.
Yeah.
He got their original long snapper got injured, and it just caused havoc. And it just meant that, well, really, that the Raiders couldn't do anything. And the Chargers, who weren't good, Philip Rivers only threw for 231 yards and a touchdown. He was actually outthrown by Carson Palmer. And the running game was awful, but they still managed to sneak out the win. If the Raiders hadn't had this, could they have won that game?
Possibly. But, I don't know, early on it was all Raiders. I thought they looked quite good. But then Rivers completed one long pass to Robert Meacham, I think. And then after that, they seemed to get into the stride and they were a lot more dangerous in the passing game after that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are shocked that Robert Meacham only got two targets, because coming out of New Orleans, people thought he was going to be a big part of this offense. But the biggest part of the Oakland offense was really Darren McFadden, and it would surprise people to know that he had nearly as many receptions as he did carries of the ball. He only carried the ball 15 times for 32 yards and had 13 receptions for 86 yards. But Freddie, this makes sense, doesn't it, to only have him running the ball 15 times and most of it being receptions, because it gets him out of harm's way a little bit.
Yeah, it does. Given how injury prone he's been, it definitely makes sense. And also, he's always been known as a very good pass catching back, so it makes perfect sense to use him this way. And I think it is the best way to use him, really.
Yeah, I think Oakland fans will be pleased that they've finally figured out a way to use him, and hopefully this will keep him on the field. And I don't just mean that for Oakland fans, I mean that for NFL fans, because I honestly feel he's one of the best backs in the league, if not the best back, if he can just stay healthy. And I'd love to see him play for a full year. I don't own him on any fantasy teams this year, but I just enjoy watching him play. And I think if he stays healthy and Palmer can play just similarly to how he played this week, he was good, but he wasn't outstanding, then I think Oakland could really, really do some damage in that AFC West, which is already very up in the air as it is. What do you think, Colin?
I still think they're a little bit off challenging for the playoffs at the moment. I mean, like you said about McFadden, it also makes sense to use him as a passing option, because they don't really have a pass-catching tight end off the top of my head. I can't think of one. The offensive line's sort of a bit patchwork, so I think they'll do okay, but not playoffs.
No, I think what they might do is they may cost somebody like the Chiefs a shot at the wild card if they can take a few games out of that division. So San Diego will probably be very pleased to have got them out of the way this week, I would imagine. So, because I think they could be dangerous, especially while McFadden's healthy, like I said. So that pretty much wraps up our week one games. So has week one overreacting changed any of your ideas over who's going to be in the Super Bowl? Mark?
I'm saying Redskins going to be in the Super Bowl. No, I'm not going to say Redskins going to be in the Super Bowl. Honestly, it hasn't. I'm not going to overreact to anything. I still think the teams that we thought are going to be there or thereabouts, I still think they're going to be there or thereabouts. I don't think anyone has done enough in just 1 week to suggest that they're going to jump up and definitely be the new favourites for it. And similarly, I don't think anyone's done that badly that they're going to come out and say, oh, well, we're definitely not challenging for anything this year. So I'm still saying that it's still pretty much the same as we were a week ago.
Yeah, I don't think you can read too much into it. People who pick the Packers might just be a little bit unsure whether or not they could get past the 49ers later on in the season, but I think we'll wait and see. But talking about the Packers, we'll move on to next week's games now. And the first big game of the week is tonight, and we're gonna make a couple of predictions here, which I'd imagine many of you will have seen the game before you hear this. So we may look like geniuses, or we may look like absolute fools. But the Bears and Packers, it's at the Packers tonight. If the Bears win and the Packers are 0-2, how bad is that for the Packers' season, Ollie?
Well, pretty bad. I think it was Neil Reynolds that tweeted earlier on that 22 teams since 1990 have made the playoffs after 0-2 starts. So it's already, it seems like, a pretty must-win game for them, and we're only, you know, a few days into the season.
Yeah, and for the Bears, it'll also be a huge psychological advantage when they have to play the Packers back at Soldier Field if they can have taken a game off them already at Lambeau Field, because it'll take a lot of pressure off them. So I'm just going to go through each of you for each of these games we're now going to preview, and just tell me who you think will win tonight. Ollie?
It's so close. I'm gonna go Green Bay.
Freddie?
Yeah, similarly. I've been debating whether or not to give the upset here, but I just don't think I can pick against Green Bay.
Mark?
I'll take the upset. I'm gonna go with the Bears. I think that I just like the upgrades they've made on offense, and their defense is still as good as ever. So I'm taking Bears over Packers.
Yeah, I'm also gonna go with the Bears, mainly because it would make me so happy to see it. But I also think they've got such a strong offense now, and I don't think the Packers' defense is good enough to stop Matt Forte and Brandon Marshall as a combination with the rushing and receiving, respectively. So, wouldn't shock me at all if the Bears upset the Packers, and I imagine there'll be a lot of Packers fans beginning to panic. And I've already seen somebody, I think half jokingly, said, "Oh, we're missing Joe Philbin." So, maybe that then them sort of things will get more serious if they lose this week. The next important game, it's not necessarily what you consider a big game, but it's vital for both teams. It's the Saints and the Panthers, who were both expected to do good things this year, and one of them is going to be 0-2, unless the unlikely tie happens. But who is it worse for if they go 0-2, Mark?
I'd say it's probably worse for the Saints than it is the Panthers. The Saints have the bigger expectations. For me, they are the better team. And for them to start off 0-2, given their head coaching situation, it would be almost a disaster for them.
Yeah, they can't really afford to go 0-2 and have everyone on their backs. It's not going to be good for them without any real leadership in the locker room. And I feel a bit sorry for interim head coach Cromer, because I think I have a horrible feeling if this starts to go downhill, the players just aren't going to listen to him. And that could be a long 8 weeks if the players have no interest in listening to him. So, again, who do you think is going to win tonight, Mark?
I'm going to go with the Saints on this one. I didn't see anything from the Panthers last week. And the Saints, at least, even though they weren't great, they put up 30 points. So I'm still going to go with Saints.
Yeah, that's fair. Sorry, it's not tonight. That's on Sunday, that game. Ollie, who do you think?
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I'll take the Saints as well. Didn't think Cam played that well on Sunday. The running game wasn't really happening for them. So, yeah, I think I'll probably pick the Saints to edge it.
And Freddie?
Saints as well for me. I just can't see Drew Brees having another terrible week, and I expect him to shred that Panthers defense.
Yeah, I think we can make that a clean sweep, although I do think the Panthers will put up some good points, and I think this could be the perfect game against a struggling defense for Cam to get back into the rhythm. And as I own Brandon LaFell in a few places, I'd quite like to see him have a good game. The other one on Sunday is, and it's another 1 o'clock kickoff like the Saints Panthers, and it's the Ravens at the Eagles. Now, Michael Vick struggled last week, and this is going to be a real hard game for him to show that he's not as bad as he was last week, isn't it, Ollie?
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens were fantastic on Monday night. Vic's got to come out and prove the doubters wrong, but against that defense, I don't think he will.
No, I think if that defense gets a hold of him, they could maul him, Kevlar jacket or no Kevlar jacket. So, again, we'll go through. We'll start with you this time, Freddie. Who do you think's got this one, the Eagles or the Ravens?
I'm going for the Ravens here, I think, based largely on how good they looked in week one and how poor the Eagles' offense looked.
Yeah, that is probably the reason I think most of us are going to go the Ravens. Mark?
Yeah, I'm going Ravens. Even if the Eagles looked like good last week, I'm still going to go against an NFC rival. So,
Ollie?
Yeah, I'll take the Ravens, especially if Flacco's playing like he was the other night.
Yeah, I think even if the Ravens get a little bit worse and the Eagles get a little bit better overall, it's still going to be the Ravens by probably almost double digits, I would think, the way that Flacco played. So unless he has a tremendous game and Mike Vick has one of his games of the ages that he can sometimes have, I can't see the Eagles pulling this one out. Our final big game that we'll just talk about quickly is the Broncos at the Falcons on Monday night. Now, Manning, he showed up on primetime TV last week on the Sunday night. Can he do it again this week, Freddie?
It's a tough one. I think this is actually the hardest one for me personally to call. I expect to see a high-scoring game. I think probably the Falcons just coming out on top. They'll be my pick. I like the way their offense looked on the weekend, despite the holes that the Chiefs had on their defense. And they've obviously had a history of being great at home under Matt Ryan, so yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Falcons.
Yeah, and with both teams showing that they're willing to go no huddle in the first week, it could be great fun if we just see no huddle for four quarters, which is highly possible if it turns into a shootout, don't you think, Ollie?
Yeah, that'd be fantastic, but Manning's quite good in domes, but I'm still going to take the Falcons with Matt Ryan looking better than ever.
Mark, are you going to go Matt Ryan as well?
No, I'm going Peyton Manning. I think they're two very evenly matched offenses, but I think defensively the Broncos, the way they stepped up last year for the last eight or so games, their defense was outstanding, and the Falcons have lost their corner. Is it Grimes? They've lost him for this week. So I think that just gives them a little bit of a dent, and I think the Broncos take it.
Yeah, that was what was swaying me towards the Broncos, but then I just think about Julio Jones matched up on Champ Bailey and think about the young, fast receiver against the slightly aging cornerback, and I think I just can't see how anybody can really stop the Falcons, apart from maybe the 49ers, because their offense is just so powerful if they can all stay fit. So I'm going to go with the Falcons, but hopefully it's a good game, whatever happens, because it's got the real makings of a real cracker. We won't go through any more games because we could be here all night going through them. But do you see any particular places where shocks could happen? I personally see maybe Tampa Bay being able to knock off the Giants if the Giants have another bad game like what they had last week. Does anything stand out to you as being a possible upset, guys?
I could perhaps see Jacksonville beating Houston at home. That would be, I think, the surprise for me to watch out for this weekend. Other than that, I'm not really sure. I think it might be a fairly straightforward weekend.
So you're telling me that you don't see Brandon Weeden throwing 5 touchdowns and a win over the Bengals?
No, unfortunately not.
Ollie, do you see any big shocks this weekend?
I don't know if you'd really class them as shocks, but maybe the Seahawks beat the Cowboys.
I probably would after the way they both performed in the first week, yeah. So,
yeah,
it's not a bad shout. And, Mark, are you going to tell me that your Washington Redskins are going to lose in what I'd consider a shock loss to St. Louis?
No, of course they're not going to lose that one. mind you saying that. The Rams have been sort of a bit of a bogey team for us for a while, but no, I don't see too many shocks happening this week.
Right, well, that pretty much wraps up the main part of our show today. It's been a bit of a long one, but I think it's going to be like this most weeks with the amount of games that we're going to have to cover week in, week out. Of course, you can get in contact with us at the4thandinchespodcast@gmail.com, and we'll either do our best to answer any questions you have on the podcast, or we'll get back to you through the email. But you can also follow us at 4th and Inches Pod. Thank you very much, guys. Ollie, you obviously run Second City Fanatics. Have you done much writing recently?
Yeah, I wrote a bit about the Colts on Monday, about who they might look to target in the draft. I know it's early, but...
Yeah. Wow, with that's positive.
With that bad, it's required.
So with the phrase "that bad," I think I'll turn to Freddie next. have you got any articles that you've done recently, Freddie?
I took a look at the Browns' 53-man roster for Second City Fanatics earlier on, before the first week of games. Did an X's and O's piece on wide receiver routes, which you can find on the site too. And I'll probably have a piece up on Tuesday analysing what's likely not to have been a very good first couple of weeks for the team.
I like to see your positivity.
yeah.
Mark, where can we find you?
Well, I've done stuff on Second City Fanatics. I've done the breakdowns of what differences between 3-4 and 4-3 defenses and stuff like that. You can usually find me on SB Nation's Redskins site, Hogshaven, and occasionally on the SB Nation draft site, Mock in the Draft. I'm doing posts like pretty much every week on there, 2 or 3 posts a week on there. So check me out on Twitter and you'll see stuff on there.
Yeah, I'm sure that we will do that. And you've been absolutely brilliant today. You all have, guys. You can find my articles at the 1AM Sports website. You can also follow the at 1AM Sports Twitter feed, as well as the at Second City Fanatics Twitter feed, where most of the news breaks, because that's where most of the guys on this podcast are from. Right, we'll just finish up with our 2-minute drill, and this week I'm going to ask you guys, are the Jets for real, or is it the preseason expectations what we are going to see in the future? Ollie?
I think people are going to get very excited about them beating the Buffalo Bills, and people expect them to do really well, and I still don't think they'll do anything this season.
Freddie?
I don't expect them to do too well. Obviously their offense isn't going to be as explosive going forward from this point, but I don't see why they can't put up double digit wins and surprise a few people.
And Mark?
No, I'm with Ollie. I don't see them doing much this year. And I actually in preseason, put up a predictions thing saying I thought they could be a shock top 5 pick in the draft next year. So that kind of sums up my thoughts about the Jets.
The bigger shock for me looking at the Jets is probably not actually the Jets, it's the Bills. I think people predicted the Bills at being around 500, and I can see them being below 500. And I think that the AFC East is going to have probably the best team in the conference, and equally the worst teams in the conference. I could easily see the Dolphins and Jets and Bills all down there with the Browns. Sorry, Freddie.
That's all right. I have to face reality somehow.
So, thank you very much, guys. It's been another great podcast, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.